Money Sense is brought to you by the Ellenbecker Investment Group, three-time recipient of the Better Business Bureau's Torch Award for Business Ethics and Integrity. The Ellenbecker Investment Group is the only Wisconsin investment company to receive this prestigious award more than once by providing exceptional planning and extraordinary service each and every day. Go to ellenbecker.com. Listen to Money Sense Saturdays at 2 p.m. and Sundays at noon.
Welcome to Money Sense. I am your host, Anne Mank, Wealth Advisor and Director of Wealth Coaching at Ellenbecker Investment Group. Ellenbecker Investment Group is located in Pewaukee, just east of Highway 164 and Capitol Drive, in the Town Bank Building, and also in the Village of Whitefish Bay in the Equitable Bank Building. We also serve clients in the Bonita Springs, Florida, and if you'd like more information, please visit ellenbecker.com. So a lot of times when I'm working with clients, especially if they have kids, one of the main priorities we always talk about is school costs, particularly college costs. And we eventually get to the conversation of 529 plans. And because we talk about it so much with our clients, we wanted to make sure we can share some of this information with the community as well. And so today we have the chair of the College Savings Foundation, Vivian Tsai, and she is quite the expert in this industry. And so I'm really looking forward to the conversation that we're going to have regarding college spending, saving, and 529 plans. So Vivian, welcome to the show.
Thank you very much for having us.
Well, and I think congratulations is in order as well. Didn't your son just graduate?
Yes, he did. In fact, I actually have a second son graduating in a week's time as well. So I have both of my children are going to be graduating this year, and I have fully drained my 529 plan account.
Well, that's good planning on your part, right?
Absolutely. It's very well timed.
Very well timed.
Well, you know, you have a very long history in the financial services industry. But what made you decide to kind of focus on college savings and 529s? Like, how did that become your niche or your main initiative?
I'll start by saying it's always been very personal to me. My education, my own experience, and having grown up in California and having had my parents able to largely fund my own college accounts, when I became a parent, it became job one for me that I be able to do the same thing for my children. So when I became a financial advisor way back in the day, more than 20 years ago, one of the first things I did, very much like you and your colleagues at Ellenbecker, is I talk to my clients around college savings. I ask them, how are they preparing for their child's upbringing? And at the time, it felt very personal as well, because at the time, my children were toddlers. When I got into this business, financial services business, my kids were 2 and 3 years old. So it was something that I felt really committed to. I also had some, I'll say, personal life experiences that where I became the sole provider to my family that almost derailed my dream. It didn't ultimately derail anything. It only hardened my sense of commitment to the cause of advocating for putting money away for college. But I saw that dream at risk when I was the only provider and at the time making not a lot of money. You know, I could barely cover my childcare expenses. This is all before kindergarten started. But at the time, I remembered what I told my clients, which is, it doesn't matter how much you put away for your clients. For your child. What matters is that you make it a habit, because I knew my children were going to continue their educations beyond college, beyond high school. I didn't know what they would do, didn't know where they would go, but I wanted to have some money set aside for them at the time. So I've been very, very passionate about it, probably because I'm a parent myself.
Well, and a lot of us, you know, as a parent, you know, I have three kids and that's always been a focus of mine. But for me to spend all this time looking at 529s and to the extent that you've taken it as well, you know, it really takes, you know, a certain interest in it. Is it more like what really drew you to this? Is it more of just making sure you could get to that goal, or was it maybe some of the tax planning that can come through it? Or maybe you just saw your clients really struggling. Like what made you say, okay, I know I'm focusing on this as a financial advisor, but now I really want to be part of this College Savings Foundation because I think I can really make a difference.
Yeah, well, certainly job one with the 529 plans are the tax advantages. I mean, those are tremendous. Those, you know, the ability to have tax-free growth and then tax-free distributions when you're paying for things like, you know, my son's textbooks, or even the fact that he, the son who just graduated, he lived in a residential hall at the university that was probably more expensive than your typical standard dorm. But the advantages of being able to pay for that, having saved for that for so many years, having experienced the growth, and the tax benefits are tremendous. The other benefit to me, I love to compartmentalize. I like to be super organized with things, but I also like knowing that there's this money set aside for this purpose and it's over here and it doesn't mix and mingle with the money that I have set aside over here for this other purpose. 529 plans allowed me to do that. It allowed me to have an account for Andrew at the same time as having an account for Sonam. It allowed me to have individual conversations with each of my sons around where money went into. Did it go into their car account at the local bank, or did it go, and this was all before they started driving, but that's kind of, I wanted to tie money to purpose. And the 529 plans helped me tie money and investments to their future. And for me, that is a huge a benefit of 529 plans, and certainly a reason that it resonated with certain people. It also helps because you could think of it in terms of, okay, that's not the vacation money, right? This, you know, vacation comes around and a trip to Disneyland's on the horizon. Well, we could just take this junior's education fund money that was sitting in the bank, not a 529 plan, and maybe spend it on that. Well, we'll worry about funding the stuff later. By compartmentalizing all those funds makes it somewhat untouchable, psychologically at least. For me, that worked.
And that's an interesting way of thinking about it. I like that a lot because a lot of times when I'm talking with clients, I always talk about buckets, like what bucket are we doing and how do we do this bucket? And I've never thought of a 529 that way, but that in essence, what it's doing is it's giving you that self-contained bucket. It puts discipline in place for you because once you put it in, it's not very easy to take out. And if you do, there's penalties if you're not using it the right way. But then what you also said in there too, is that it gives you choices. Like it allowed your son to have the housing he wanted, where he wanted, because you had already made the decision to save. And I think a lot of times individuals might struggle with saving, but what they don't understand is that it gives them choices. It gives them, if they have the discipline today, it gives them the freedom down the road to make the decisions they want to make.
Absolutely. I mean, I think you nailed it right on the head there, because if I were to have paid that amount of rent or housing, which came to about $2,300 a month just for his housing, out of pocket on top of my housing, on top of his brother's housing, it really hurts. Yep. But having spent years
18, 20 years, and we continued to fund the 529 plan when they were both in school.
Yeah.
So having the money there, it really gave us the flexibility to have those conversations, and it gave us options.
Yep. Yep. That's wonderful. And so we've been talking about 529s. And so what I want to do is just take a quick break, but then really have you explain what a 529. So those that are new parents or might not understand exactly what those tax benefits are or how it works. If you could just give us that high level kind of foundation so that we understand what we're talking about and how it might help. So with that, we'll be right back. So today we have Vivian Tsai with us. She is the chair of College Savings Foundation. If you could just explain what a 529, so those that are new parents or might not understand exactly what those tax benefits are or how it works, if you could just give us that high level kind of foundation so that we understand what we're talking about and how it might help.
529 plans are savings accounts. Savings accounts that are dedicated to putting money away now for any expenses for education, apprenticeships, college, or vocational studies in after high school. So they are what are called qualified tuition programs, which is just a more complicated way of saying they are tax-free accounts, very similar to a Roth IRA, if your clients are familiar with saving for retirement in a Roth IRA, and a 529 plan account is like that, but for education savings. Now, 529 plan monies can pay for everything from your traditional four-year university, like my sons attended here in the state of California. They attended UC Berkeley and California State University, Polytechnic University down in San Luis Obispo. Could absolutely use all of your funds to pay for tuition, fees, room and board, books, supplies, computers, you name it. A former colleague of mine used to like to say everything but booze and bus. So no alcohol, that wouldn't necessarily pass the sniff test with the IRS for a qualified expense. And transportation is generally not considered a qualified expense. So, I sometimes get asked if parents can buy tickets to and from their kids' schools. Generally, that's not considered a qualified higher education expense. But most other things are. And as of 2018, you also have the ability to use up to $10,000 for what are called kindergarten to K-12 expenses, tuition expenses. Congress did pass what we'll call another feature of 529 plans, to be able to contribute to K-12 tuition at the private school level, obviously, for any of the children benefiting from these 529 plans. And so that certainly helps as well. It allows and speaks to the flexibility of being able to spend for not only future higher education, but for K-12 expenses for those families who send their children to private schools.
And sometimes I get the question too, and you know, it's always helpful to clarify, like, can a child have more than one account? Can more than one person, like, does it have to be the person funding the account? Can they have multiple accounts? And also the other question that kind of piggybacks on that is, do we put the account in the name of the child, or do we have it in the name of the grandparent or the parent? So can you explain kind of how logistically that works when we're talking about registering and funding these accounts?
Oh, sure. So to your first question, yes, kids can have multiple 529 plan accounts. Where it might get a little trickier is the fact that there's a state like Wisconsin where you have your tax, you have the ability to have a tax deduction.
And from a state perspective, what they're going to want to do is if a parent has an account for, say they have an Edvest account for Junior, and they also have a Tomorrow Scholar account for Junior, what they'll be doing is they'll be looking at the cap, which I believe in the state of Wisconsin is north of $500,000. They look at the total cap and say, if Junior's account is under $500,000, you can absolutely continue to fund it. If those two accounts add to more than, then you're not able to find it. That would be really the only scenario I would imagine in which, you know, you want to keep an eye on it. It's not banned by any stretch. Any child can have, you can have, there are 92 different 529 plans across the country. And in theory, if you wanted to do all that paperwork, you can open accounts at every one of them for my son. So yeah, absolutely.
And does that matter? Like when you talk about the different accounts, is it an account in their name or is it where they're the beneficiary of that account?
Typically your 529 plans,
the beneficiaries, the account owners have to be the age of majority. So if your child, your typical structure is that the student, the future student is a beneficiary. Now the account owners can be anyone. The child, if the child's 18 years old, can be the owner of their own 529 account. Parents can be owners, grandparents, aunts, uncles, strangers can be owners of a 529 plan for that beneficiary. There are, you know, in recent years, there have been many features added to the vast majority of 529 plans that allow gifting, very easy electronic gifting directly into a child's 529 plan account. So if you have a loved one in your life who you'd like to contribute into their future college savings, rather than opening an account for them, just finding out whether they currently have a 529 mm-hmm. plan account, and then utilizing these online programs. YouGift is a name that I've seen with several of the plans. eGift, giftofcollege.com is another website that allow people to not have to necessarily open a 529 plan for the children in their lives, but to give the gift of college by giving a contribution to that child's already existing 529 plan, which may be owned by a parent, loved one. Okay.
Yeah. And so if we want to then start taking money out, so, you know, the kid is going to school freshman year. A lot of times individuals don't understand how to get that out or what their responsibilities are. Like, it's either I have some that are just taking it out freely, or I have some that are like literally photocopying receipts and like giving them to me. And so how do they take money out? And, you know, you're pretty familiar with the Wisconsin plan. Like, if they had costs that they now need to pay for, are there timing issues? Are there different ways of distributing? What kind of documentation do they need?
Well, all of this is really self-reported, which
means that whenever you take a withdrawal from your 529 plan account, create a folder. It can be an electric folder. I'll tell you personally what I did, because this is very much my real life scenario. Was whenever I requested a withdrawal from my account, I saved the electronic receipt in my Google Drive. And I very candidly do not ever expect to need to reference those, but I'm keeping them because I want to know. I want to have somewhere where I go, where I've got Andrew 529 folder in my Gmail box, everything related to my son's costs get dragged in there. I tend to be, I'm somewhere between the person who's just grabbing money and the person who's photocopying everything.
Yep.
Right. I mean, I'm typically writing notes to myself if I know that I've chunked out some money, but I'm generally good with the fact that at the end of the day, 529 qualified higher education expenses include things like room and board. It's a number that is look upable at your financial aid office at the local university. You take that dollar amount, that's the dollar amount that I withdraw from the 529 plan account. That way I'm not, you know, checking the box every time my son decides to go to Wendy's or Taco Bell. I couldn't be bothered, right? So it's just they have this chunk of money, and that money is what they get to sort of draw down from. I will say I have not heard a definitive need to track paper. I haven't heard of any IRS audits that have actually come down into this business, because generally higher ed is expensive, and most people, including the IRS, understand that many of these expenses are absolutely legitimate. But I still think it's very important to be able to have a story around what it was spent for. Okay. At the end of the school year, your freshman will get, at the end of the taxable year, you'll get something called a 1098T that will be issued from the local university. That piece of paper gets provided to the CPA, which in your case may be you, that goes into, you know, the tax form as what the university has documented as having been received from you. But beyond what the university has collected, you might also have the landlord, you know, Joe Smith, who you was receiving a couple hundred dollars every month. How do you track that? Well, I have a copy of my son's lease agreement that is scanned into my Google Drive. So these are the things that it becomes after 4 years, or in my older son, I had a son on the 5-year plan. After 5 years, it becomes a little second nature that you're not, it's not as tedious as perhaps I'm describing it. But for me, it is worth going through this organization in order to have availed of 20 years of savings, 20 years of tax free growth, and you know, the ability to use it, and the peace of mind of having to not have to juggle every month when I'm being presented with bills from, you know, different authorities for my son's education.
Yeah. And that's a really good tip that you shared about that standard cost of room and board for colleges. Like, I think if most people just know what the tuition they're paying and know what that standard cost is for room and board for that particular college, like between those two, most people probably drain most of their 529 just with those two expenses. And those are easy to track. So that's great advice for those that are just making sure they have enough documentation if there was that audit, just to make sure that everything is, you know, all T's are crossed and I's are dotted. So I want to take another really quick break, but when we come back, I would like to talk about the survey that the College of Savings Foundation does on an annual basis and some of the results that has shown, and kind of talk about that so that parents with younger kids can actually plan for the future and kind of understand what the trends are that we're seeing. So today we have Vivian Tsai with us. She is the chair of College Savings Foundation. And we've been talking about 529 plans, paying for college, But the College Savings Foundation has an annual youth survey. And in here, it's it was quite interesting because one, what was interesting was the demographic that you were kind of talking to. And it is the young ones, the Generation Z. We're just starting to hear about this Generation Z. My kids are falling into this bucket. So I have my idea of what I think they're going to do. But I also, you know, with talking with clients, I get the benefit and kind of the gift for my clients of seeing so many people in different versions of this, like those that just have the kid, those that have gone through college. And I'm also starting to see those that have a large amount of debt that they've taken out either for themselves that they haven't paid back or now for their kids and just how it compounds. And some of what the younger generation is seeing from the older generation is having an effect on what they actually choose to do for school. But the one that jumped out at me, and so this is one that I'm trying to help my kids with, but it said, as some of the notes, it was saying one of the key findings is that the majority of the kids are taking part in paying for this. But they also said that 66% plan to live at home. Like, that surprised me. And I'm assuming that's because of the cost consciousness of this next generation. So when you're looking at the results, like when it came to costs in this generation, how is it starting to affect them or the trends that you're seeing with those that are going to college in the next 10 years or 5 years?
Yeah, you know, we've really seen an evolution in young people, whatever generation they've been called.
Right.
we've been doing this survey through the College Savings Foundation. This is our 13th year. And we've really seen over the last 5 years or so, we've seen kind of a marked directional change as far as, or maybe tonal change with regards to how young people are viewing the college expense. Maybe college isn't the right term for it, really. Yeah, the life beyond high school.
Yeah.
And you know, with the pandemic that started in 20, you know, it was the first year that we decided to deviate a little bit from our survey and really go a little more in depth into what these kids are experiencing at home. And many of these children have, and just for your audience, we survey sophomores, juniors, and seniors from around the country. It's a nationwide survey, really sort of the heart of Gen Z, people who, you know, are born in the early aughts at this point. And really, I think there's this maturity or this evolution or real world experience of having witnessed adults around them lose their jobs, or even college students around them not sure what they were graduating into.
Right.
So that, I think, had a real impact on these young people. And I think led to this idea of the cost value and really the purpose of going of this experience after high school, right? So the purpose being for many of these young people is around getting a job. They're so career oriented right now. And really more career oriented and in a way, really more in the sense of being able to support themselves and maybe support their loved ones. The living at home aspect as well was interesting, but I'm hearing it even in my personal community where kids are actually thinking about doing a gap year or living at home to save money for going to college.
In fact, I was speaking with a mother this morning who just told me that her daughter is going to defer her acceptance to an out-of-state public university so that she can stay home and earn money so that she could pay for that out-of-state public university. Or, you know, their agreement. It sounds like the child wants to pay for one third of the cost. Now that's, you know, this is a 17-year-old and she kind of reflects very much what we're seeing on paper with that survey, which is this real sense of responsibility and accountability, skin in the game, that we're seeing from more young people. And I do think it's a reflection of the times that we've lived in. Also, just the reality of being able to put money away. I anecdotal as well, but I have another friend whose child just graduated from college, you know, top Northeastern private college, and moved back to California into her mother's house and has basically shared with her parents that none of her friends, all of her friends are moving in with their parents. The stigma that I'll just say my generation grew up
with. Right, mine as well.
Right, which is the last thing we wanted to be doing. Right. Was living at home.
I couldn't get out fast enough, right?
Exactly. I was telling my kids, I have not been under my parents' roof since I was 17 years old. So it's a different, it's a wholesale change in their approach to adulting, that they're choosing, they're actually making the choice not because they're moving home. They move home with sort of rules around being adults in the household. They're doing it for practical reasons of wanting to sock money away and settle down and have the adult funds to be able to build a house, buy a house, raise their own kids. And so it's quite interesting and heartening to see young people really growing up fast in this way. Quite, you know, that might be what the experience really is they've had to grow up fast.
And I've also noticed with like this generation in particular, so it really is like the first generation that's been wholly online. Like, so they've, for them, their community can be wherever they are. So it's not like you and I, if we wanted to find a new community or network or connect, like we literally had to go to school to do that physically. And then we had to go to the career so that we could find the mentors so that we can climb the ladder or do the career that we're looking for. And so I know when I was going to school, like that was really the only choice I had was you go to school or maybe a trade. Nowadays, there's just so much flexibility. Like I have a friend who her daughter is taking a gap year, but completely organized. You pay a tuition to do it, but she's going to live in three different countries while she does this. And I was like, where was that when I was growing up? So I think, you know, having some of these choices and knowing that it's not, you need to do next step because it's going to affect you for the next 50 years. So I think this generation has a really good understanding of this isn't forever. So I'm not going to put $100,000 in because I don't even know if this is what I'm going to do in 5 years or not. So I think they have a good understanding of the return on investment, for a lack of a better word, of knowing that their choices have consequences because they've seen their parents or their you know, aunts, uncles kind of struggle with the debt that kind of comes with that of going all in when you aren't quite sure yet. So did you find anything as you were looking at these results that were a little bit different than they had in the past? Like a lot of it, you know, they're putting more skin in the game. They're saving more for it. One thing, one of the stats that I saw was that 65% were headed to cost conscious options. So that's a public school or a community college. Once again, it's just a change in mindset where community college is really now becoming part of something they can leverage to get the education they really want. How has that changed?
Well, I think that it's become a lot more I hate using this word,
but acceptable. Mm-hmm. Among some of these young, these high schoolers, and I'll just sort of take it back to about 10 years ago, if you were to ask anyone to make the adult responsible decision to start at a community college and then transition into, using my home state of California, the University of California system, which is a fantastic public university system, but you can do it at a fraction of the cost by starting your first 2 years in a community college and then doing what's called the transfer admission guarantee program into the UC system that basically gets you a place at a UC Davis, that is UC Berkeley. It's a no-brainer. The program's been around for years. Kids didn't necessarily want to touch it. They're like, no, I'm all about the four-year college experience. And what we're seeing now is that they're leading with that. Mm-hmm. It's becoming very much part of the junior and senior year conversations with parents around, you know, the TAG program is a very viable and almost stress-free way to get into the system. Whereas if you're applying as a high school senior here in the state of California, vast majority of high school seniors are not getting into the University of California system. So again, it's becoming a part or one of the alternatives that's no longer a secondary alternative. It's very much a part of the options on the table. I think it's becoming more acceptable to do that. It's being talked about more amongst young people. And I think that California is not the only state that does that. And so that is the reality. You can take your public school four-year tuition down to almost nothing in states like New York, where you know they've got a program where they've got free community colleges for certain income groups, for certain qualifying students. So you can get that associate's degree for free and then transfer to a SUNY system school. You've just kind of cut your cost in half. So thankfully there are children out there, young people and their parents and mentors who are making those decisions. I think that that's been part of what I've seen as the maturation of this generation of kids. They're trying to think creatively around how to minimize their expense for the same outcome.
Right. And those are great ideas and things that, you know, as a parent, I would not think of or know because they just weren't around when I was trying to think of how do I pay for school and where do I go. And, you know, for me, it was, I just sat in front of, you know, a computer for many, many hours doing all these scholarships, trying to apply for as much aid as I could and just kind of hope for the best instead of having a strategy to put in place when we're thinking about 529s. So I just want to take one more quick break, but when we come back, I do want to talk about like, how can we think about this so that debt, like kind of tying it all together, like how do we put that strategy in place? What are the key things to think about and maybe some resources that you know about that parents can go to? So we'll be right back. Welcome back. Today we have Vivian Tsai. She is the chair of the College Savings Foundation, and we've been talking about paying for college and 529s and the different tools and resources that are out there. And so we've been talking about how things have changed since we went to college. how there is a different kind of mindset of what your options are. But the fact that now these 529s have been around and now we really use it as a tool and some of the benefits we can get from it. So as we're kind of in the last couple of minutes here, when someone is trying to put a strategy together for paying for college, what are, you know, either things that you know make a huge difference, or where are some common roadblocks or potholes that they might fall into so that they know what to look out for as they're starting this journey?
Yeah. Well, the first thing I'll say is, I don't know whether your listeners are at the front end of the journey or on the cusp of writing that tuition check this August. But for the people on the front end of the journey, I will say putting money away now for that future state is the best possible outcome from this 40-minute interview. Mm-hmm. Doesn't matter how much. Could be $25. It could be once a month. Putting money away now, a dollar saved now, is a student loan or a parent loan taken later. So there's no bad reason not to front load your college savings and to do it in a 529 plan, because there are a myriad programs out there with terrific investment options that will be managed for you professionally by individuals who will manage to your child's year of enrollment, and that might be in 2034. Mm-hmm. So starting early is a big part of it. Also, you know, being informed and also paying attention to really just the laws of the land around the importance of these tax advantage programs. Mm. You know, be engaged with your communities, talk to your leaders, make sure that they understand the value. Again, many of your listeners may be listening from the state of Wisconsin, mm-hmm. and your state's Department of Financial Institutions does phenomenal work advocating on behalf of education, on education savings, even on, you know, on the student financing side of the house. So staying engaged in communities and being part of the conversation, I think, is another thing that all parents or people who are involved in their children's lives need to be. I think it's what we owe our young people. You were saying what, there was another question in there about what are some of the roadblocks?
Yeah, what are some things that might trip someone up that if they just heard the word of advice, or, you know, one that you already mentioned was, you know, just save something, save consistently and stay and save early than later. It makes a huge difference. But is there anything else that as you're going through talking about 529s or distributions where, you know, you really see that if somebody just knew XYZ, it can make a difference?
Yeah. I know that we often get asked about financial aid, or we often get asked about, well, my kid is a star athlete and they are absolutely going to get a full ride scholarship. and those are things that are absolutely possible.
Right.
But not sure if that's absolutely probable.
Right.
And so people have used that in conversations with me as what I'll call their rationales for not saving in a 529 plan, mm-hmm. because their child is going to get a scholarship, or that their child will not be able to get financial aid because they have 529 plans. And those two things are absolute miss. Okay. So let's address the scholarship aspect of it. Say Junior does get a scholarship. Great. A lot of scholarships only apply to tuition.
So unless that child can eat their tuition, they're still going to need something, right? So the vast majority of scholarships will cover some of your expenses, but not all of it. Mm-hmm. So it's not an either or thing. Having savings set aside is really important to cover other things, to cover the, I don't know, study year abroad that may mm-hmm. not be covered by the scholarship. So having that fund, those funds earmarked would be a good thing. Let's talk about financial aid. Many people say, well, having savings in 529 plans will mean that my son does not get any financial aid. And I would say absolutely not either. There's this complicated formula with regards to how many dollars you have saved in your savings accounts and in your 529 plan accounts. And there is a percentage called the expected family contribution of a percentage of those savings that will end up trickling down to impact your student's financial aid. And that percentage is 5.65%. So you've got, say you've got 50, you have $100 saved in that 529 plan account. The university considers $5.65 as your family's expected family contribution, and the rest of it is ignored. So mm-hmm. it's really, you know, those two are some of the greatest resistance mm-hmm. Questions to saving ahead for your child. I would say save ahead now, because you never know what is going to happen later. I'll use my cousin as an example. Her daughter got an athletic scholarship her freshman year, full ride, private school, great program. And a year in, her daughter decided to drop the sport entirely. Entirely. So all of a sudden, you know, they were on the hook for the entire thing, or yep. moving her from that school, which wasn't an option because she enjoyed the school, which is right. why she dropped the sport. So, you know, yep. you just never know what your child's decisions are going to be. So having as much funds set aside for them
yep.
now is a good thing.
Yep. It gives them the options to make those choices. So Vivian, if somebody wants some additional information on the foundation or wants to know a little bit more about what we talked about, how do they go about finding the foundation or getting some of these questions answered?
Absolutely. So our website is located at www.collegesavingsfoundation.org. Or if it's too long for you, you could just Google College Savings Foundation
right.
and get to our website. We've got tools for parents, primers on how to open a 529 plan. We have links to resources like the Department of Education and apprenticeship.gov, which is part of the Department of Labor, giving parents and children and young people resources to see what they need to know as they're approaching this big decision.
Perfect. Well, thank you so much for your time today. We really appreciate your expertise and all the information you've been able to share.
Thanks so much, Anne.
Well, I just want to remind our listeners that Money Sense airs on Saturdays from 2 to 3 p.m. and on Sundays from noon to 1. If you like today's show and want to know more, please visit ellenbecker.com or call us at 262-691-3200. Remember, before we plan, before we advise, before we invest, we always listen.